Fat Chance by Roy Trumbull, copyright 2009, Chapter 2, Rancho Baracho. The Rancho Baracho Plaza and Mall affected an ersatz Spanish-era look. The Spanish tiles on the overhangs were made from composite plastics rather than ceramic. Sheet metal drains to catch runoff were concealed alongside the notoriously bad Spanish troughs. The Rancho's first fortune was that its blueprints and scale model had looked good enough that the city fathers had signed off on its construction without endless meetings. The locals were delighted in that there was scarcely an excess that wasn't catered to by one of the 70 businesses located there. Trader Juan's was a favorite destination. If it could be dipped in dark or milk chocolate or mole and put into a plastic box, they had it. In the meat section, there was Gant kosher cut-up chicken alongside packages of pork chops. There was a convenience store called Bodega Chafa that featured snack food, cigarettes, soft drinks, and lottery tickets. It was next door to Senior Chafa's steakhouse. If you ever wondered what happened to those cows that have to be prodded to their feet with a forklift to be taken to slaughter, here you could find out. With massive amounts of salsa and hot sauce, they were made as presentable as a homeless bum wearing a thrift store suit. In the midst of this pseudo-Spanish farrago was a French restaurant, the Café du Trèfle. It wasn't that it belonged there so much as that they'd signed a lease and made prompt payments. Señora Gigante was a dress shop for women of a certain age who were dimensionally challenged. Next door to them was Evita's Cleaners, which specialized in removing underarm sweat stains and their consequent drip lines. On the ground floor, facing the side street, was the Manteca Gym, filled with sweating gringos doing battle with expensive chrome-plated machines. Through a common entranceway, but on the second floor, was Bel Porcino Massage. Bel Porcino Massage was owned by the brothers Horace and Ronald Lee. The business consisted of the two of them and Karen Olson, their receptionist assistant. Horace was the older of the two. He stood about 6'3", was of medium build, but his face was round and full. He was in his late 40s, prematurely gray, and had a comb-over that covered his thinning top. He had an engaging smile and spoke in a firm way that told you he was in charge. His brother Ronald was 10 years younger and had the solid build of a tennis player. His face was hard and there was a small scar on his left cheek. To women he was danger made flesh, the kind of danger that attracts them. Over half his clientele were young ladies. They didn't need a massage, but after he'd sculpted them with his firm hands, they daydreamed about the experience until their next visit. On this particular day, Horace was practicing tough love on B. Windermere, an aging socialite on the matron track, who was in desperate need of his services. She'd been a great beauty not that many years before, but the good life, with all too many cocktail hours and canapes, had advanced her calendar pages. She looked 10 years older than she was. Her hair was thinning. She was no longer spending the big bucks to keep it properly colored. Her jowls were showing. She couldn't get into even the most fictional of single-digit dress sizes anymore. And to add to her agony, she found that her husband Wallace was shopping around for a trophy bride. It wasn't so much the loss of his love she resented as it was the idea of going to a party as the ex-Mrs. Windermere and encountering the new Mrs. Windermere at the punch bowl. She wasn't hiring Horace's services to try and save her marriage. She just wanted to be in decent enough shape to pull hair and scratch eyes when the time came. Mrs. Windermere was well known for her parties. Her picture was always showing up on the society page wearing a dress previously seen in the style section of the New York Times. That is, if the designer had allowed for sufficient expansion possibilities. In the newspaper, she might be pictured standing next to a director or actor or some rising artist or playwright. She had a menagerie of social lions at her beck and call, and her parties often had Mensa members rubbing elbows with porn producers. A Nobel Prize winner might be seen engaged in conversation with a starlet who just smiled and nodded so as to not break her vacuum seal. Horace surveyed B. Windermere as if he were looking at a used car of dubious lineage. "B., the last time I saw you, you were going on a cruise. I'd say you never got more than 5 feet from the buffet all the way down one side of South America and up the other." "Horace, you're being rude to me. I won't stand for it." "That was my professional opinion. It's the truth. What I see is what others see." B started to blubber a bit. "God damn it, Horace. Guilty as charged. Now fix it. Please, please fix it." "Okay, B. Now get out your meter."
"My meter?"
"Yes, your kit. It's in your purse, isn't it?" Her face fell, and she fumbled around in a rather full, lumpy handbag and brought out a little black pouch. Horace unzipped it and picked up the glucose meter within and stepped through the recorded readings. "You've been a bad girl. The last reading is from 3 weeks ago. What would Dr. Monroe say?"
"Oh, Horace, I just hate having to stick myself."
"Well, we're not getting started until you do." There was silence for a few minutes. Then she moved over to a table and used the spring-loaded lance in the kit to produce a tiny drop of blood for the test strip. A few seconds later, the meter showed a reading of 240. "It's as I thought. Not only have you let yourself go, but you're endangering your health. It's 3 hours past lunchtime. That's a high reading to have 3 hours after a meal." B looked down, unable to make herself engage Horace's eyes. Then she said, "I didn't have lunch today." "I'm afraid starving yourself makes no sense. Your liver is fully capable of supplying the missing glucose. Did you ever have a diabetes class?"
"I went to one 5 years ago, but I never finished it."
Horace frowned. "This is none of my business, B. I'm not your doctor. I don't give medical advice. But in your face and figure, I see trouble. I will do my part to help you, but you must do yours. Now take out your cell phone and call Dr. Monroe and make an appointment." B hesitated and looked sulky, but dialed the number and did what Horace had asked her to do. Then he nodded, and she went over and took off her outer garments and got up on the massage table.
"You've been very disagreeable to me today, Horace."
"Yes, I know."
"I must invite you to my next party. There's been entirely too much fawning lately. You'd help balance it out."
Horace had a hearty laugh. "We'll work on your face today. You know all the tricks about colors and patterns that camouflage fat, and you'll use them. But your face is a dead giveaway. It will take at least 3 sessions for me to treat it, and then we'll work on your hips, stomach, and thighs." As soon as he touched her cheeks and chin, she fell into a deep sleep. And Horace did what only he and Ronald could do: extract fat by touching it. His moves produced a greenish-yellow glow on Bee's flesh, and there was a sort of benzene-like odor in the air. Horace sculpted her flesh slowly and carefully. He worked on stimulating the elastic nature of her skin so it would contract smoothly as the fat was removed, thus retaining a tight surface void of folds and sags. He pushed on a button and Karen came in. "B will awaken in a few minutes. Bring her a warm washcloth and stay with her while she puts her face on." He handed Karen a multi-part form with billing information for the session and a note concerning the number of subsequent appointments B required. "When she's ready, call this number. It's her niece's cell phone. She's waiting in the parking lot, and we'll meet her downstairs at the door."
10 minutes later, Bee was ready to go. Ronald saw her in the reception room, and, as it was after dark, he offered to walk her to her car. Bee explained her niece was meeting her. "That's okay. I'll go with you anyway. I'm done for the day." At the door, a woman was waiting. Bee said, "Ronald, I'd like you to meet my niece, Laura Roizen." Ronald gave a slight nod and said, "Nice to meet you, Miss Roizen." Laura was very attractive, just out of college, and was used to young men flocking to her. She was a brooding brunette caught up in the importance of her youth. Ronald, on the other hand, looked at her as if she were a vase of flowers. For once, she became the one doing the looking.